This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Our first guest today is Tom Markowski, prep editor for the Detroit News. We're going to talk prep playoffs. The football playoffs are in full force now, and we're going to talk with Tom about some of the prep playoffs. So if you have any questions as we look at the prep playoffs in high school football, give us a call once again at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Let's bring in our good friend, Tom Markowski. Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Good afternoon, Earl. How are you?
Okay, pretty good. I know we haven't talked since what? We talked the first week of the regular season, and now we're deep into the playoffs. Any surprises to you, really surprises out of the eight divisions this far, or is anything basically going just like you thought it would go?
Well, I don't know if they're going just as I thought. I think Grand Rapids Catholic Central losing last weekend was a big one in Division Four. I think a lot of people felt that they were going to win it, so that really opens up that division. You know, I always thought that Division One would be wide open, and I still think that way. We have a lot of big games this weekend. I think Division One has gone pretty much according to Hoyle. You know, there was a minor upset last week with unbeaten Livonia Churchill going down, but we still got the heavyweights like Muskegon and Brother Rice and St. Mary's still alive in the upper divisions.
And that is good. And I mean, you know, here in the Michigan area, we got a few teams left that left from around this area. Most of them are in the smaller divisions. It's like I know we said at the beginning of the season, it still holds true. It looks like Ithaca is going to be headed to Ford Field for another chance at another state championship.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're rolling again. You know, there's a lot of football to be played. You know, they have a new quarterback this year, but you know, it's the system Hesbrook has installed there at Ithaca, and you know, they're doing it quite well. I thought there was a big hurdle last week, and they didn't have that much trouble, but yeah, we'll see what happens down the road.
Yes, that's one thing. If you look at the high schools, I think you'll find out, and you may already have, that those teams that have a strong middle school and elementary school programs usually leads to having a pretty good high school program, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it makes it easier for the coaching staff at the high school level if they're not only have good people at the lower levels, but if they're running the same system.
Yeah.
Talking to coaches about that, it's so important that they don't have to teach them the new offense or a new defense. It really keeps continuity within the program.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, they talk so much about basics and fundamentals. There's a stronger emphasis on basics and fundamentals at that level. And it really helps the high school levels once you get there. If you're a kid and you say you want to get them out for football, if you get a chance to learn the fundamentals the right way, that can go a long, long way.
Well, sure. Then let's take the other side of the coin, Earl. If you get a group of kids coming into your program who are not familiar with the fundamentals, then you end up spending, you know, maybe the greater portion of that preseason, you know, practices on teaching fundamentals, when you could use that time to, you know, maybe implement some plays or maybe work with just the new players at different positions individually.
Yes. Now, how if you looked at over the years, how has when the teams that go up to the championship game, maybe they get to Ford Field, how did that hurt some of the basketball teams, or does it have much of an impact on most of the basketball teams? Some kids, as you know, play both sports.
Yeah, I don't know if it hurts. It hurts them initially in the month of December, and if you're fortunate enough to, you know, get to Ford Field, and you know that's whatever this year it's November 24th of that range. It takes the kids probably 3 weeks of practice. You know, they're going to take some time off, probably just to rest their bodies a little bit. But usually by mid-January, they're okay. It's just, you know, their record will probably suffer earlier in the season. But, you know, Earl, as well as I do, that record doesn't mean much once March Madness comes around.
Yeah.
It's just, if nothing else, it actually gives the other players on the varsity, you know, maybe some more playing time in because they're going to be able to work with them more than they would with the players who play football and a little bit late for practices.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us. We're talking with Tom Markowski, prep editor for the Detroit News. Give us a call at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Hey, Tom, when I'm looking at some of the other divisions, some of the lower divisions, of course, you know, Mid-Michigan area seems to have, they've got Portland in one of their, and Pewaumee-Fay is in another division. We've gotten pretty good in the lower division. I know we're not strong in the upper divisions, but in the lower division, it seems like we're pretty well representative.
Yeah, you are. I mean, I think Pewaumee's got a great chance against Decatur this Saturday. I thought East Lansing had a good shot at beating Caledonia. Obviously, that game went to overtime, and it's just too bad. There were some really good teams in mid-Michigan and in Lansing area in particular in the upper divisions, but, you know, Lansing Everett got upset by East Lansing, but you could actually see maybe that one coming because during the regular season it was a 6-0 game, and when you play the second time, it's real tough for that team that won the first time, particularly in a close game, to come back and win again. But, you know, I think Portland's had a good season. I think they got a shot too, but I think PW's got a good chance, and, you know, you're looking at D7. I think the big matchup is in the other bracket where I would assume Nouvelle would play Loyola in the semifinals, and the winner of that will obviously get to Ford Field. But I don't know. PW's got a shot just as well as anybody in that one bracket to get to Ford Field.
Yeah, they do. They do have a good shot at getting there. Hey, how are the eight-man division teams? Have you had a chance to check any of those out?
No, I really haven't. I know I did a story last season just kind of, you know, taking a look at the eight-man football. No, you know, with everything else going on, I knew that would happen, too. When I heard of it a few years ago, it's like, how the heck am I going to cover eight-man football on top of everything else I have? And most of those schools are, you know, obviously small schools because they want to keep those programs going. And there's very few in the Detroit area. I think the closest one is like Marine City, but no, haven't had much chance of looking at that too much.
Okay. Well, we got a caller for you. We got Todd from Lake Orion. Todd, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Glad to have Mr. Markowski on. I wanted to ask you a question. Obviously, living in Lake Orion, follow the OAA a lot more than I do the Lansing area. I get the chance to listen to them about them on Earl's show and some other local stations. But if I'm correct, Mr. Markowski, you got to do the Lake Orion-Clarkston football game. That was a game you guys broadcast, right? I was at the game. But did you do that game?
Yes, we did.
What was done? Why were Lake Orion and Clarkston separated? I mean, normally they either play each other in the first or second game of the playoffs. They both perennially almost always make it. Do you know what was done specifically that these two teams were split up? Was that done on purpose? And then obviously they've got some tough teams to beat, being in Division I, some very good teams, Cass Tech, Rockford, Dakota. But do you think that a Clarkston-Lake Orion rematch, I think, would be a very special game? I think it was a very hotly contested game. I know it wouldn't necessarily bring in people from all over the state. But I tell you what, if you wanted to get a lot of people down to Ford Field, you put Lake Orion and Clarkston in a Division I title game, and I don't think there would be a game that could come close to outdrawing it. Thanks a lot.
That's a question. Actually, a couple questions within that caller's comments. But, yeah, I think that would be an interesting game at Ford Field, and it might be, you know, one of the best represented as far as fan-wise at a state championship game. But getting back, it's the Michigan High School Athletic Association that, you know, sets up the pairings. And the reason I think Clarkston went west and Lake Orion stayed on the east side of the state was there just wasn't a whole lot of teams in Division I on the west side. I mean, you had the Traverse City representative. You had West Ottawa from Holland and Rockford. But the other schools, Grand Ledge, for example, you know, come from mid-Michigan. So they had to ship somebody out there from this part of the state. So that's how it worked. It was kind of funny. There's just not a lot of who you would think would be Division I teams just didn't make it. In fact, you know, a lot of teams like a Walled Lake Northern, for example, got moved up from Division II, who most people had them slated for, into Division I. Just a lot of the, you know, the big schools population-wise didn't make the playoffs. So personally, I'm glad they split up Lake Orion and Clarkston. I get tired of watching games like that being played so soon after in the late in the season because they did meet in the eighth week. That's really been a stigma for some of the teams in the Kensington Lakes area, for example, you know, Canton playing Plymouth and then Plymouth playing Churchill. And it's the nature of the beast that, you know, you're located, you know, so close to one another that you would be ending up in a district. But when I first saw that Lake Orion and Clarkston was going to be in different brackets, I thought that was neat because so often, I mean, throughout history, they've always met, and like the caller said, in the first or second round of the playoffs.
Okay. Got another caller for you. We got Michael from Saginaw. Michael, how you doing?
Thank you. How you doing there, Tom? I'd like to ask about it. It's like a high school scandal up in Mount Pleasant where supposedly somebody in their 20s playing high school football up there, and Mount Pleasant has to cancel the guy. What do you think about academic eligibility rules? Because I hear even on ESPN that, like, in this school district in Rockford, Illinois, they had to lower the grade point average, but their team had a winning football season. Now, what I want to know is, years ago when Ross Perot was made a rule about guys at least had to get a 2.0 to get a grade point average, and I just, the idea of high school sports is supposed to be to help contribute to the student experience. But if we got so many kids, like, in the inner-city areas that don't have high grade point averages, do you think they should be eligible to play?
Well, there should be a standard rule for each school system and each school district. They set their guidelines. Now, there's a Michigan High School Athletic Association has their own minimum requirements for a grade point, but you take a school system like the Detroit Public Schools, and they have a 2.0 requirement. So, if you dip below that, then you're not eligible. No, I actually agree that there should be a minimum. Because if you don't have a minimum, then if you open it up to anybody, then where do you get the incentive to do well in school? Now, I understand that there should be the incentive there already to be a good student, but for a lot of students, the incentive is to play athletics. So, you know, for them to play, they have to reach a certain grade level or a grade point average. So I actually think it's good that there's a minimum requirement.
That's what these kids was then saying. I wouldn't play football. I would, like a lot of inner city kids, they said, if I wasn't playing sports, I wouldn't even be in school at all.
I know.
I got to ask you, too, since basketball is coming up, it's like a lot of kids from Flint, they going to academies. They going out to academy schools, like in the South mostly, boarding schools and things of that nature, even to play football, too. I just want to know, why is the academics they said the competition is much better in those academies and those boarding schools. I just want to take this. I'm going to move it along here. I just want to take your opinion off the air about that. Thank you.
You know, a lot of kids, I wouldn't say a lot of kids, there's a small percentage actually, but some kids will go out of state to, or even, you know, to some academies within state to perhaps play at a higher level of competition rather than the school system that they're in. I don't know. That's a parental choice. You know, hopefully they're not doing it just for athletics, that there would be academics involved as well. It's a free country. That's what makes us great in the United States. You can do whatever you want to do as far as that's concerned. I don't agree with it. I think you should stay within your school system and work within the framework of your coach that you more or less grew up with in high school. But, hey, if their parents think that their child can get a better opportunity by going someplace else, who's to say no?
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. And, hey, thank you, Tom, for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll talk more We probably talk more prep sports again as the playoffs continue to go on. We're only 2 weeks away, basically, from the championship game. So, hey, we'll talk again, Tom.
Okay, thanks, Earl. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Tom Markowski from the Detroit News talking sports. The time, 20 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
A week ago, Armand called us from Long Island, hiding from Superstorm Sandy.
This is crazy. I'm seeing trees, everything falling right now, and I'm grabbing whatever I see food-wise. I'm charging my computer and my phone.
I'm Neil Conan. A week later, an update on lives changed by Superstorm Sandy. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon, I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. Our high today, 42 degrees with partly sunny skies. Partly cloudy and a low in the mid-20s tonight. Tomorrow, the high will be 45, partly sunny with a good chance of rain Tuesday, and mostly cloudy with a chance of rain Wednesday, the high 46.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And now we're going to talk Michigan State football with our good friend Joe Rexroad, who's been following these, well, we've all been following these struggling Spartans this year, 5-5, and well, let's bring in Joe and let's talk a little bit about Michigan State. Joe, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Earl. I feel like I just saw you minutes ago.
Yeah, I couldn't get over there, but
Were you not? I thought you were over here for the early part of the Izzo. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm confused often.
Yeah, no, you're right. You didn't see me over there though. Hey,
you didn't
Joe.
Miss too much.
Yeah, we've had it's been a very surprising year with all these losing teams and close games by to Michigan State, and they've lost, you know, five games this year. Amazingly, when you look back now, I mean, we made a grandiose prediction sort of at the beginning of the year. How do you see this team now when you look after 10 games? What would you say about the Michigan State team? What's the good and the bad?
Well, you know, the good is still the defense has been good. It hasn't been clutch, but you know, it's still. The way the defense has played has been more than enough to win more than five games at this point. And, of course, the offense has been the much bigger issue, and it hasn't been, I don't think, as good on any level as it needed to be or as good as it expected to be. So, I think I think special teams have been not as good, too, you know.
Yeah, it's
really,
true.
You know, in various ways, Michigan State under Mike D'Antonio has made more impact on special teams, I think, in most of his seasons before this, and it just hasn't been there. And certainly Keyshawn Martin is leaving is a big part of that. And obviously, all these issues, they really miss some of the guys who left, and some of the guys replacing them just have not been up to par. But, you know, it's also, you look at this season, you look at the last two seasons, and the last two seasons were not that far from being like this season, and this season is not that far from being like them. It comes down to a handful of plays at the end of games, and this team has not been making them enough. It's made them a few times, or else this team would be 2-8. I mean, it made the plays against Boise State, Indiana, and Wisconsin, but you know, hasn't done enough in those close games. The last two teams were outstanding in those close games, and there you go. I mean, the margin, you know, the bottom line is going to look way worse than last year's, but the quality of play, the margin overall, it's not as big as the record's going to suggest.
Yes, I was wondering as well about how do you look at the development of Andrew Maxwell? How far do you think he's come since the beginning of the year?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I thought that Wisconsin game was really that was a big moment for him, that late drive, say 8-9 passing and you know, then the touchdown pass in overtime. There's nine, and he completed nine total the other day in 27 attempts. Now, certainly there were more drops the other day than there had been, and you know, some of that stuff's out of his control. But, you know, I think certainly Andrew Maxwell has not been as good as they hoped. And I think, again, you can tie it all together. You can tie it to the offensive line, the running game, the receivers, the coaching, whatever you want to do, you can tie it all together. But, you know, I think certainly in every level, they haven't been quite as good as they hoped, and that includes him.
I think with him, I just think sometimes, even to me, the most important thing for a quarterback, number one above all else, I guess unless you're a dual threat guy, but if you're a quarterback in an offense like this, the number one thing is accuracy. And at times, I mean, he has a huge arm and he's made some throws this year. I mean, pro throws, you know, fantastic throws. But I think his accuracy hasn't always been there. And I think sometimes, you know, it's very easy for us to all sit here and look at it and say, well, you got to stand in that pocket and, you know, you missed this read or that read. It's very easy from the press box. But, you know, he does have to get better at, reading the field, going through his progressions, making the right decision and all that. I mean, he looks like a first-year starter, and he is. And, you know, next year I think they're going to need him to take another step forward. But I definitely expect Maxwell to be the starter next year. And I haven't seen anything that leads me to believe, well, there's just no chance with him. He's just not going to end up being – I think he could be an outstanding quarterback before he's done. But he still certainly has work to do.
Yes. Well, you know, at the beginning of the year, of course, we were led to believe at the beginning that Andrew they sort of told us that he was a two-threat quarterback, a threat to run and the pass. He's definitely shown that he's not very mobile. Does he need to be more mobile, or does Michigan State, or should they? I think they should maybe recruit a couple of mobile quarterbacks so they can hopefully head in that direction.
Well, I never got the impression he was a dual threat guy. I mean, some coaches said, yeah, he's a little bit more athletic than Kirk. You know, I mean, he's a high jump guy. Antonio said that. So, you know, I guess I thought maybe he might take off a little bit more than Cousins did. But I think everybody's known. I mean, he's a pocket
passer.
Quarter, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, it's an interesting question on moving forward. You know, Tyler O'Connor is very athletic and a guy who – actually, Dan Rochard told me last year it reminds him of Keith Nichol in terms of his combination of athletic ability and big arm. And then Damian Terry, who is coming in the class of 2013, who's just having an unbelievable senior season in Erie, Pennsylvania, as a dual-threat quarterback. So they are kind of heading that way in recruiting. Some even say Connor Cook, who is right now the backup, is a little bit more of a runner, although I think he's still more of a pocket guy than that. But yeah, I think, you know, I still believe that, especially in this offense, the number one thing is you got to have a guy who can stand in there and make accurate throws. But certainly, if you get a guy who can make plays with his feet, keep plays alive, and get you some first downs every once in a while running the ball, I think that helps. Does Michigan State need to get like a Braxton Miller, Taylor Martinez, and a Rousen type guy? With this offense, I don't think so. I think that's why Kirk Cousins beat out Keith Nichol, because in this offense, it's more important to have a guy who's more of a pro quarterback, a guy who, you know, makes the throws versus makes the runs. But, hey, if you can have that full package, you can have the John Elway who, you know, makes the throws and can go ahead and rip off a 30-yarder, hey, there you go. Why not?
Yeah, that's certainly true. It's been an unusual year, you know, with all the close losses. I sort of took at it like, well, you know, they lost the close game, but they had so many of them the last 2 years. I think it's, karma's catching up with them.
Could be. Yeah, you know, but I you can look at it that way. I also think, I mean, look, the last 2 years, this team had unbelievable chemistry and leadership.
Yes,
I mean,
they did.
I mean, truly extraordinary. I mean, we said it when he was here, but, I mean, now it's maybe easier for people to see. And, of course, people didn't appreciate him. I mean, I heard people every week, why isn't Andrew Maxwell playing instead of Kirk Cousins?
Mm-hmm.
And I said it was ridiculous, but people still said it, and they say it every year about the starting quarterback. But Kirk Cousins wasn't just a great quarterback. He was, I mean, you know, he was an incredible leader. And I think that does have something to do with a team being able to pull out these games. This team is young. I mean, that's one thing to remember. Now, they may lose some underclassmen to the draft, but it's a very young team. I mean, if the underclassmen stayed, you'd have, I think, what, 9 starters back on D and, 8 or 9 back on offense. Or, you know, I think it might have been 19 to 22 if everyone stayed total. I mean, so that's a young team. And you know, so you look at that and how teams often develop, and you can see where this – you can kind of look in retrospect and say, well, this is the type of year where – you can't just expect to win all those close games all the time, but maybe this team now learns, like the 2009 team learned going into 2010 and got better at those games and got better at finishing. I mean, that's certainly what Michigan State hopes happens in 2013.
Hey, Joe, what about the, you know, The only thing, as you know, I used to talk about one thing Michigan State always seemed to lack, and it started, it's rearing its ugly head at me again, and that's the lack of speed.
Lack of speed. Well, see, I think their defense is extremely fast. I think this is the fastest. And, you know, Taylor Martinez burned it because of some assignment errors the other day. But I think, I mean, you look at the even the Michigan game, Wisconsin game, whatever. I mean, I think defensive speed has been a huge thing for this team. I think in the secondary, Darquez Denard caught Taylor Martinez from behind the other day. He can run with anyone. Johnny Adams can run with anyone. I don't think speed is an issue. Now, if you talk about they could use a speed at running back right now.
I think
there's a position where losing Edwin Baker, you know, that's where speed is missing, certainly. But overall, team speed, I guess when I think of team speed, I think on defense first. I think it's there. And even at receiver, certainly these receivers are not as good as the other guys who left. But you know what? B.J. Cunningham would be the slowest receiver on this receiving corps. But he was incredible at running his routes, at beating defenders, at doing all the little things to get yourself open. And so he was an outstanding receiver. He wasn't blazing fast at all. Some of these guys are faster than him, but they're just not as good at getting open. So I think it's not always a speed thing. I think it's also an experience and technique thing. And that would be the one area would definitely be they need to find for next year. They need to find a guy in that backfield who can go ahead and run 60 yards for a touchdown when he gets a chance.
Okay. Got a caller for you. We got Woody on the line. Woody, how you doing?
How you doing? Joe, I'd like to explore the BCS matchups with you. Do you have a pencil and paper?
No, I don't, but go ahead.
Okay. Champion of the Big Ten, Nebraska to the Rose Bowl. Champion of the Pac-12, Oregon to the Rose Bowl. The Fiesta Bowl, K-State. The Sugar Bowl, Alabama. The Orange Bowl, Florida State. Then you pick from, and Louisville is out to the side, Notre Dame out to the side. You take whoever you want to pick. Either Bama is number one in the BCS final standings, and Oregon number two. They get removed from their spots and put in the title game in Miami. The first replacement pick would then go to the Sugar Bowl. If the Sugar Bowl doesn't want to pick Notre Dame and they want to stay home state, they take the SEC, probably number two is LSU, as the replacement for Alabama. In the Rose Bowl, I can't see any way that Notre Dame would not be picked by the Rose Bowl for a Notre Dame-Nebraska matchup. I keep hearing that they want to pair Kansas State with
Notre Dame in the
Fiesta Bowl, but if the Rose Bowl's got the pick ahead of them for the replacement teams before Fiesta gets the first pick of the regular ones, I can't see that. I could sell 150,000 seats, Nebraska, Notre Dame, and the Rose Bowl.
That's a great point. That would, and I tell you what, boy, Nebraska sure needs, if it is indeed Nebraska, and it probably will be, boy, how much better. I mean, I think Notre Dame's a good team this year, but boy, how much better would you feel about playing Notre Dame in that game versus playing Oregon, you know, if they didn't get into the top two? Yeah, that's a great point, because you're right. Most people are kind of assuming that the Fiesta will end up with a Notre Dame-K-State matchup and get the nice kind of like the 3-4 teams there. But, yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if, you know, it's also one of those things of the Bowls. Do they work together as the Rose Bowls? You say, hey, man, we're taking Notre Dame. We get a chance to take them.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the TV people would be salivating to me,
yeah,
for the Rose Bowl, the ABC that gets that game to match them up. As I remember, Notre Dame lost to Nebraska back in the Johnny Rogers era in the Orange Bowl, and I think they played a home and home. I don't think they've played that many more times.
You talk about two national programs with huge followings, like you said, ratings, tickets. That's a winner. And I think Nebraska could win that game, too. So I'd like to see that. I'd like, because I really want to see Oregon, Alabama. I think that is a game we should have in the national title game.
Yep.
Right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Woody.
Bye-bye. Hey, Joe, when we talk about these national title games and things like that, like what Woody brought up, when you look at the Big Ten, and boy, I know you probably saw a Matt's column and thinking about Indiana could end up in the Big Ten title game. I mean, that's still a mathematical possibility.
Oh, it's more than mathematical. I'll tell you what. I mean, look, they're home against Wisconsin this week. Wisconsin, obviously, new quarterback after Will Golson knocked out their quarterback last week. Hey, Indiana could beat Wisconsin, and if they do, they can even lose a game and possibly still get in. I mean, because Wisconsin finishes with Ohio State and Penn State.
Yeah.
Ohio State at home, Penn State on the road. Wisconsin could end up losing out, getting to 6-6. And yes, Indiana could be in the Big Ten title game, and it could even be there with a 3-5, potentially with a 3-5 Big Ten record. I mean, which is just amazing, but it's possible. I mean, this weekend is huge, and of course, if Wisconsin wins this weekend, then it'll be Wisconsin, Nebraska, and most likely. But if not, I think you really have a chance for. It's been great improvement here. The offense is very good for Indiana. I mean, Michigan State fans who watch that game, no, Indiana's not a joke. I mean, they can move the ball.
Yeah, they can move the ball.
They scored 49 on Ohio State a week later, lost 52-49. I mean, they can move the ball. But, I mean, seriously, if you're the Big Ten and you have Indiana in the Big Ten title game, that's just, let's face it, that's just a sort of like a insult to injury this season.
Yes, this has been a pretty bad year for the Big Ten, unfortunately, and it looks like, some of my compatriots in the booth are having a lot of fun at the lack of offense and the lack of the Big Ten not doing that well this year.
The Big Ten's taking a lot of shots, and can't really say much because it's been well earned this year.
Yes, it has, and now we just got to look ahead to the future, and hopefully the basketball season will sort of make up for everything that's happened and went wrong in football this year.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a much better year in the Big Ten for basketball. I mean, I think the league has four teams that could end up in the Final Four, in Michigan, Ohio State, Indiana, Michigan State. I think all four of them, if they stay healthy, develop, improve, I'm going to have a chance to make some deep runs in March. And maybe Michigan State may both be playing at the Palace in that first weekend.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, when we've only seen the two exhibition games, and it definitely doesn't look like the team that Tom Izzo wants, and I was just surprised that, he wants to run, and the practices we've been to, the team run looks good in practice, but, boy, during these first couple of games, it looks like they're stuck in quicksand.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think definitely some players aren't running as hard as they need to run, for sure. And I think, I think both opponents, it's what you're going to see all year. They can want to run and they'll try to push it. And I think they got some easy baskets. They got some fast break baskets in those two games. But, most of their opponents are going to do all they can to get back. And so, to run like that, you've really got to force it sometimes. You got to force the issue. And I think sometimes that caused some of their turnovers as well. I mean, way too many turnovers, 37 in two games. So it's going to be an interesting balance because I think this team is better off if it can play up tempo. It's better off guarding, forcing some turnovers, getting up and down the floor. But, it doesn't mean that, it's going to be able to run like that all the time. So it's going to be interesting. I still think in the half court, this team can get some things done with Derek Nix and inside-out shots and things like that. They also have to find enough people to make those shots.
Okay. Hey, Joe, you're heading over to Germany, aren't you?
Yep, heading over on Wednesday.
Okay. Well, have a good trip, my friend, and I'll talk to you when you get back, buddy.
All right. Well, sounds good. Thanks, man.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot, Joe. We'll talk to you later, buddy. Bye-bye. And that's Joe Rexroad right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
After a campaign season marked by attack ads, smears, and doubts about the purpose of government, Craig Furman asks, why does anyone run for president? For that matter, why would anyone run for dog catcher? I'm Neil Cunha. The real reasons people run for public office. Join us Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
It'll be partly sunny and our high today will be 42 degrees. Tonight, a low of 25 and partly cloudy. Partly sunny with a good chance of rain tomorrow, the high 45, and mostly cloudy with a chance of rain Wednesday, the high in the mid-40s. This is Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we ask you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. And we want to talk to you each and every day, so we'd love to hear from you. So just give us a call. Talk sports with us. Or, you know, you can also check us out, you know, on our podcast. You can check that out. You can check some of the other things out. So we've got some a lot of information we try to pass your way each and every day right here on WKAR. But more importantly, though, we need you to do us one small favor. Just spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR in East Lansing. Once again, that's WKAR East Lansing on AM 870 WKAR. And we're going to talk a little bit more. We're going to be open line now for this last 20 minutes, or actually 18 minutes now, to talk with you and take your comments and your thoughts and listen to your comments on whether it's Michigan State or Michigan or some of the upcoming basketball season. So if you'd like to give us a call, talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. But more importantly, we may have a few cuts that we can play for you. We got a few cuts from the games over the weekends and from the Michigan State game. That was such a tough game and such a heartbreaking loss. I know, there were some bad calls, no doubt about that. There were some bad calls that were made in that game. And but that's part of football. That's part of football, is all these bad calls, and you'll see that. And Aaron, we have our cuts ready? Okay. So we got Aaron over there, got the cuts ready. I know we got a couple from Nick Hill and a couple from who else we got over there?
Oh, yeah, we got some cuts from D'Antoni and Narduzzi as well. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because Narduzzi, his cut, he was asked about that bad call that was made.
And he was playing better. We saw it on tape. I mean, they're number one offense in the Big Ten, so he's obviously not just a runner. Although, he can run it. You know, dual threat quarterback, and he's been throwing it well. So he made the plays when he needed to.
Yes, Taylor Martinez. He did. He made some good plays when he needed to. He was very key in that game. I mean, he broke off those two long runs. He was an outstanding quarterback. That was why, of course, I picked Nebraska to win that game, was because of Taylor Martinez, and he proved he was a lousy passer for most of the game, but when he needed to make the plays, he made them. I mean, he made the plays when he had to make the plays. And I guess that's the sign of a good quarterback. You make those plays when you really need to. And what was our other we had our other Narduzzi cut. What was that one?
Yeah, that was just about the speed.
Okay. Yeah, because he was talking about the speed of the team and the speed of Martinez.
You know, even though he thinks he's as fast as Bolt or whoever, but he's flat out faster. And he's a good football player. He's good. I mean, he's not as big a tailback, as a Braxton Miller, but he's fast.
Yes, he was talking about how Taylor Martinez is faster than Denard Robinson. He says he's faster than Denard, and he certainly proved it to Michigan State that he's extremely fast. We had a cut from Mark D'Antonio just talking about the game.
But they fake the toss and get out there on the naked. The quarterback decides, takes off with it. We're collapsing. We got nobody You know, we got nobody there. Safety misses the tackle, I think. We have a couple people miss the tackle, and he makes the play. And he made three of them like that. You know, he made three long runs. And he threw the ball pretty effectively as well. So credit him, credit Nebraska and what they were able to do. But I think that we had every opportunity to win that football game, as we did some of the other games this year. But we're playing good people. We're playing good opponents. We're playing well-coached football teams. So it is tough.
And also, Mark D'Antonio, he talked about the bad call.
It's just a bad penalty to have, any way you cut it. And, you know, there were too many unforced penalties on our end that hurt us in the game, I felt. And, you know, you can't have those. They're going to come back and get you. You know, we got a 4th and 10 at the end of the game. You know, we got to face the quarterback up because the way he can run it. We got to face him up. Got to cover the seams. Got to cover the seams. And got to make the play on it.
And Nick Hill sort of agreed with him. He talked about how Michigan State had too many penalties.
It was a pass interference. You know, it was a great defensive play. It was just a bad call at a crucial time in the game, you know, right down at the end of it. Quez did a tremendous job breaking down the ball. It was just a questionable call, and I do not agree with it. I think it was a clean defensive play.
And he also made some comments about that really bad call at the end of the game.
Some of the penalties during the game were good calls. A lot of them were questionable, very questionable calls. It could be, you know, a lot of people could be skeptical on it. A lot of the calls I do not agree with, and I think, you know, they're lucky calls, and obviously the turnout was a victory for them.
Yes, just unfortunate for Michigan State. The calls didn't go their way. Sometimes they go your way, sometimes they don't. And, you know, the thing is, whenever you get a bad call, you got to play over it. You have to just play better. You have to play over it. There's no getting around it. You know, people don't give you things, and Michigan State should. Well, no, they've never been given any calls. I mean, you have to play over it. You have to play over those bad calls when they come your way. So that's just one of those things that's just part of the game of football. You know, the referees make the calls, and, you know, the calls are what they are. So that's something some of you are, you know, I know some people, you know, when they have money bet on the game or things, they think that's going to change the outlook, or if they get that one bad call, it changes the outlook. It changes the play of that one game. So, sure, sometime a call can be made at the end of the game, but like Coach said, and even Nick said, you know, they had too many calls, and if you can eliminate some of the calls, you know, so you won't get caught near the end of the game. When you have a lot of calls, it's hopefully you'll be all okay at the end of the game. But that's part of the game of football, and, you know, of any sport that we have. We have rules that we have, and for the most part, people have to abide by the rules and play within the rules and not get caught. So, Aaron, did you see those bad calls in the game, buddy? And what did you think of those calls? And did it really cost Michigan State the game?
Yeah, I mean, I saw the calls, and I think most people have. If you have a television or even a radio, I think you probably heard about the call. Well, frankly, I think the last call was the biggest one, obviously, that gave him the first down and 15 yards that basically decided the game. You know, it was a bad call. You know, I think there's various thoughts on it. The fact that, one, that a ref made a call that late in the game when he's behind the defender, you know, the offensive player and the defensive player. If he was on the other side, where he was able to see, you know, the front of the play, sure, then he can make that decision. But the fact that he was behind the play, obviously it was a fast play. Football's a fast sport. It's tough to call. It's the human element of the game. You know, for him to throw and he didn't hesitate to throw the flag.
Yeah.
He threw it right away. He had no hesitation. And after a replay, obviously you could tell it was a bad call. You know, he didn't do it. The defender didn't do anything wrong. Offense, they were just both trying to go for the ball. You can't call that at the end of the game. But, you know, but as Coach and Hill said, you know, there's just times you just got to fight through it. And unfortunately, you know, that's the human element of the game. It's not something that you can really take out of the game unless you got robots to replace you. But that's not going to happen anytime soon. You know, it's unfortunate. It's just the way it goes. You got to pick yourself back up and learn from it. They had a chance to stop them. It's not like, you know, they didn't have a chance, but obviously it had a huge effect on the game. But as far as the other calls in the game that Michigan State hurt themselves, you know, those are the things they're just going to have to work on. But unfortunately, the one at the end, it's just, you know, that's just the way it goes. It was a bad call.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone.
I thought it was a bad call as well.
Yeah, and, you know, it would be great. I think something that the league, whatever, even the National Football League, you know, sometimes has done this where, especially in baseball, I think you've seen more and more of this, is, especially with the Tigers was a good example. The refs come out and say, hey, I made a bad call. I'm sorry. You know, it's just the human element of the game. But, I mean, maybe there are cases in football, but I don't see that in football too often where the refs come out and say, hey, after looking at the play, I made a mistake. I apologize to the team, and you move on from it. But, you know, I just don't see that much in football. You see it more in baseball.
Yeah, you do. In baseball, you see a lot of times that the umpires will admit to they made a mistake, or they'll see it because if everybody can see it on instant replay, you know, you might as well just fess up and say that you missed one, and that happens from time to time. You just miss a call. Right now, let's head back over to Saginaw. We've got Bill on the line. Bill, how you doing?
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I have a question about the officiating. I was at the game on Saturday and wound up watching the last portion of it on TV and agree with everybody's comments about the awful calls that were made. But my question is this. The referee, the same guy, made both of the really terrible calls at the end of the game, and he was not the head referee. Couldn't or is it impossible or can the head referee come over and say, hey, buddy, you can't make that call. It's a ridiculous call. We're going to wave it off and let the play stand? Or are they stuck with the call of a deficient referee?
Well, basically, they're sort of stuck with it, but, you know, yeah, he could do that. I mean, at times, there have been times that a referee, you know, they can say that, hey, you just made a bad call, son. We want to overrule it or turn it over. But most of the time, as you know, with officials of all sports, most officials respect the other official that's with them. And so most of the time, they won't overrule the call that the official made. They don't want to step on somebody else's toes. So you very rarely will see an official, just the lead official anyway, overturning a call that someone else on his crewmate.
Is there a chief of the officiating crew that would be in a position to do that, however?
Yes, I mean, yeah, the chief could, you know, the guy out there with the white hat, he's the chief of the crew. And so he could probably technically make that decision, but most of the time you're just not going to see him overrule what another referee has said. I mean, if there's a disagreement, if they both call it, they see it, and then they'll discuss it if two people call it. But if that one caller referee who saw it made the call, it usually stands. But unless the other guy come in there and you see two guys throw a flag, then they can sort it out that way when they see it. But for the most part, once they make that call, they just let it stand.
All right, well, I was curious because I thought, I mean, it was so clear to everybody, even on the replay, that somebody should have said something and taken control of that.
Yeah, well, I think they did. The lead official said that he just, you know, he didn't feel comfortable, of course, overturning it. Even if he saw it, he just might have still felt very uncomfortable about overturning a referee's call. And especially with a referee, you know, like you say, you saw it, I saw it, many of us saw it the other way. But, you know, that official may not have seen it that way. So. Yeah. He just saw it, and like we just said, hey, it stands, and they just let it stand.
Yeah. Well, maybe the Spartans will get a little luck for the rest of the season. Hopefully, we know we need it.
So. Yeah, you got that right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, bye-bye. And, yes, that was unfortunate for Michigan State. You know, it was a bad call, but sometimes you just have to live with those bad calls for sure. They could have, I mean, if they had I guess that's an interpretation call. They didn't have it wasn't a one that was reviewable. I don't think officials' calls are reviewable. Some of the plays are reviewable, but some of the official calls aren't. Let's talk with Jody in Toronto. Jody, how you doing?
Hey, Earl. How you doing?
Okay.
Good. Yeah, I don't think officials' calls are reviewable either.
Yeah.
You know, the call at the end of the game was a bad one, true.
You know,
there was also a call, you know, at the Nebraska end where, you know, one of our receivers pushed the defender into the quarterback out of bounds, and that ended up costing, you know, Nebraska, you know, Michigan State didn't settle for a field goal. They got a first and goal and was able to score.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we remember that play. Of course, you know, we don't because we looked through green eyeglasses.
Yeah.
You know, the Johnny, was it the Johnny Adams shot 30 yards down behind the play? Mm-hmm. You know, that was a big one. That really hurts, you know, in terms of brought that interception back. Or I don't know if it was Adams or whoever was behind the play and, you know, and made a block. You know, back in the day, that was illegal. I guess now they consider that unsportsmanlike or, you know, hitting a defenseless guy or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I say, back in the day, you know, you kind of live to see that guy running down court, downfield, not paying attention, and you clean the clock, you know.
Yep.
But it's a different game now.
It is.
So that's not allowed. But, you know, when you look at it, you know, it was some of the things that really hurt, I think, is that, you know, the games now are so played close to the vest where there's so much running and so much short passing that, you know, you set yourself up sometimes to have some things happen. That's not a knock on the teams or anything. That's just that, you know, the way the game, Alabama almost got bit Saturday night.
Yeah, they did.
You know, they were so close, you know, and LSU was, you know, so close to beating them because I just think the play, you know, the play calling, not, and I'm not jumping on a coordinator. It's what's happening in football now as everybody throws those little 3 and 4 yard passes and they run the ball up to middle for 2 yards. And, you know, you don't, you know, the short pass has become almost like a run. So, you know, you don't see the ball being, you know, thrown down. The defense is stretched, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, having played for Rodgers back in the day, you know, we threw the ball a lot. You know, so, you know, I'm used to, you know, I've always believed in throwing the ball downfield to stretch the defense, which allows other things. But, you know, as you look at it, I just think, you know, maybe the discipline and also Martinez on those long runs, that's somebody not staying football strong.
Right.
Somebody was responsible for the quarterback on the option.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever was not responsible, who decided to, you know, to get sucked in to the fullback, that's not your assignment.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, when those things happen and Martinez looked like a star, in most cases, when a quarterback runs, it's because the defense or somebody has not picked up their assignment.
Right, because we've seen that, well, you know, we know Michigan State has done a very good job on Denard the last 3 years. They've done a very good job of containing him, but, you know, maybe they should have used those same rules on Martinez, you know, to stop him, because it just seemed like the Michigan State, when you got in the flow, when you pitched to one side and then in Nebraska, they would run it back to the side where they didn't have contain at. That was the problem. And so yes, they just needed to have someone to have contain for them.
Yeah, it looked like, you know, like I say, somebody's responsible. You know, if somebody has the quarterback, somebody has the pitch, however, you know, whatever the discipline is, you know, somebody's supposed to be responsible for him. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they did it with Bernard Robinson. I don't know if, you know, they had little problems doing it on handling Mick Miller, you know.
Yeah.
The Ohio State quarterback, you know, style, mm-hmm. that style of offense, you know, seems to give them trouble. But, you know, the big thing is, you know, it's a year that, you know, your first guest said it, you know, a couple of those games could have went either way last year. And who says if we were in play, if that Michigan State-Wisconsin game was played in Madison, if Keith Nichols would have scored.
Yep, that's true. Hey, you know. Thanks a lot, Jody.
All right, take
okay.
care, Earl.
Okay, talk to you later, buddy.
Okay, now.
Yep, bye-bye. And want to thank Jody for giving us a call. Thank everyone for giving us a call today. And we invite you to come on back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up and talk sports with us right here on AM 870. We want you to come back and join us tomorrow. We want you to have yourself a very safe and a very pleasant evening. And we look to hear from you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Once again, we want you to have a very good evening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
from NPR News in Washington.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.